It's Wednesday, July 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Republican delegates are formally nominating their presidential candidate. A closer look at Donald Trump's vice presidential selection.
That nothing out there in the South China Sea is entitled to a 200 nautical mile exclusive economic zone, no land feature.
No territorial negotiations for now between the Philippines and China. Also ahead, there's more controversy for Taylor Swift. It's all on today's International Edition. The Republican National Convention is moving to the nomination of real estate mogul Donald Trump as the party's 2016 presidential candidate, along with a focus on the U.S. economy. Two of his children, Tiffany Trump and Donald Trump Jr., are set to advance his cause on this, the second day of the quadrennial convention in Cleveland, Ohio, along with some of the party's most prominent figures, House Speaker Paul Ryan and former presidential candidates Chris Christie and Ben Carson to speak. Also, a speech by Mr. Trump's wife on day one has created a bit of controversy. With all the latest is VOA's Doug Bernard, who joins us live from the convention hall. Doug.
Hello, Jim. Welcome from Cleveland.
So tell us a little bit about what's been happening at the convention today.
Well, so I don't know if the controversy about Melania Trump's speech last night has reached Taylor Swift levels, but it has continued for a day. And let's just very quickly review what happened. So yesterday the theme, there's a different theme every night. Yesterday the theme at the convention was Make America Safe Again. There were lots of speeches about needing to keep America strong, fight terrorists, that sort of thing. But really the key was the address by Melania Trump, Mr. Trump's wife. Now, her purpose was really to sort of in some ways humanize Donald Trump, soften him a bit. I think it's, you know, very true that nobody's really rooting against the spouse of a presidential candidate. And during the speech, all seemed to be going very well until actually some journalists began noticing that there were chunks, approximately about 1.5 paragraphs of text that really do seem to have been lifted from Michelle Obama's 2008 introduction of her husband, Barack Obama. It's more than just a coincidence. Now, the RNC all day has been sort of, you know, writing this off as, well, look, these are the themes of hard work, you know, your word is your honor, handing down a better world to your children, all these kinds of things. And that is absolutely the fodder of political speeches. But it unfortunately has become a distraction, I think, maybe to the surprise of a number of the Republicans here who thought they really had a strong lineup yesterday. So now they're hoping that today may kind of turn the news cycle.
It did get a little bit brutal on some of the cable news networks. They were playing both speeches, Mrs. Obama's speech and Melania Trump's speech, side by side, and you could hear
right.
The similarities.
Yeah.
Little embarrassing, but the delegates now are going to be formally nominating Donald Trump, and I guess this whole dump Trump thing is about to evaporate.
Well, in fact, as we speak, at 5:58 p.m. Eastern Time, Senator Jeff Sessions formally put Donald Trump's name into the ballot, as it were. It's a nomination to become the Republican nominee for president. Now, as we're speaking right now, there are a number of speakers at the podium seconding, giving tribute to Donald Trump, that sort of thing. This is all very typical. Now, what's going to be very interesting in the next, perhaps half hour to 45 minutes, is to what degree the, as they call themselves, the Never Trump movement types, the people who are really absolutely opposed to Mr. Trump, might try and make trouble. There's no way that they're going to stop his nomination. There's really nothing that can be done at this point, but they can make a show. They can gum things up and in some ways really kind of take some of the luster away from Mr. Trump. The real question I think all those Republicans are having right now is, to what degree does, to those who don't like him, my distaste for Mr. Trump, you know, override my affection and interest in the health of the party? So I think we're going to be seeing this really play out literally in the next 30 minutes.
Well, it makes for an interesting Republican National Convention.
Indeed.
VOA's Doug Bernard in Cleveland. Doug, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We stay with the Republican National Convention for our social media segment. And as always, my colleague G. Abby Lee is right here in the studio with the buzz online about Melania Trump's speech last night. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. Melania Trump almost broke the internet with her speech, but probably not in the way she or her speechwriters had expected. Like Doug mentioned earlier, many on social media found her speech to be a little too reminiscent of a speech made in 2008 by current First Lady Michelle Obama. You can find plenty of memes and video clips on social media that play these speeches side by side, like you mentioned, and these are some of the phrases they have both used. You work hard for what you want in life. That your word is your bond, you do what you say you're going to do. That you treat people with dignity and respect. We want our children to know that the only limit to the height of their achievements is a reach of your dreams and your willingness to work for them. And the similarities were first pointed out on Twitter.
Well, they were similar indeed. How are the Trumps responding to the controversy?
You know, though Melania Trump does have a Twitter account, she doesn't really send out too many original tweets. She mostly retweets and posts selfies, her coffees, and that sort of things. But she did share an image of a statement by Jason Miller, who is the campaign's communications advisor. And he defended her speech as beautiful, and that it included, quote-unquote, fragments that reflected her own thinking. As for Donald Trump, he sent out this tweet. It was truly an honor to introduce my wife, Melania. Her speech and demeanor were absolutely incredible. Very proud. Hashtag GOP convention.
Well, quickly, before you go, tell us about a couple of reactions from the public.
Sure. In a reply to a CNBC video clip, a Twitter user wrote, "They are like an overweight couple hiding behind a rock and thinking nobody sees them," referring to the Trump campaign. Almost 50,000 people liked that tweet. Another person wrote, "She had help," referring to Melania Trump. "She said she had help." Clearly, she didn't write that. The speechwriter stole from Michelle Obama's speechwriter. That speechwriter should be fired, putting the blame on the speechwriter. And about two people liked that tweet. Jim, back to you.
Thank you for that wrap-up, G. You can follow our Twitter stream at VOA_IE. G and myself are there as well at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Here are some of the top stories that are trending in Asia at this hour. China rhetoric turns tough after unfavorable tribunal ruling. North Korea responds to defensive missile deployment with missile test. Indonesia confirms most wanted militant killed in shootout. Corruption charge against ex-Philippine president dismissed. Pakistani forces rescue judge's son in shootout with militants. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website. And if you have a smartphone, on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. As we've been reporting, day one of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, exposed the party's lingering divisions about its presidential nominee and its future direction. The impact of these developments on the Republican election campaign going forward is the focus of our latest hashtag VOA TV show. Its host, Michael Lippin, is right here in the studio with me. Michael, what did your guests have to say about that?
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me here. Well, I discussed the state of the Republican Party with two political observers today. One of them is political scientist Justin Buechler of Case Western Reserve University, who joined us from Cleveland, where the school is based. And the other guest was Matt Gammon of market research company Wilson Perkins Allens, who works with Republican politicians like Senator Ted Cruz and who joined us in the studio. I asked Gammon whether there were any signs of the Republican Party making progress toward unity.
There are a few, yeah. And that's obviously one of the main goals of the convention, and I think explicit goals of the convention, is to come out of here with more party unity. It was a very difficult primary battle. It was a very long-winded primary battle. And you do see some signs. For one, Donald Trump's poll numbers had a bounce since April. As Republicans came around, he got about 10 to 15 more points. He's still below 50%. And still about 5 points behind Hillary, but you did see a bounce there. You also see in the vice presidential pick, I think, a relatively astute and strategic pick in Mike Pence, a guy who for a long time was a conservative stalwart, sort of a movement conservative for a little while, who's a little bit more of a mature politician, if you will, rather than Donald Trump. And I think that's a little bit of an outreach or an olive branch to some of what we call the Never Trump activists. Just sort of saying, we understand, and we're putting somebody who has defended some of what you think is important on the ticket as well.
Right. Well, let's ask Justin in Cleveland. How much do you think the selection of Mike Pence as Donald Trump's running mate will bring the party together?
I think a little bit, but I think that the point of Pence was that Mike Pence was actually the only person that Donald Trump could pick. I actually made a prediction in April on my blog that Mike Pence would be the vice presidential pick because he was literally the only person that Donald Trump could pick. Donald Trump needed to assuage the fears of social conservatives because he didn't have a record as a social conservative. He also needed to assuage the fears of the establishment Republicans and the Chamber of Commerce types who needed to be convinced that Donald Trump wouldn't do anything reckless. So he needed somebody who had experience in Congress, somebody who was a governor. And if you look at those requirements, the only person who fit the bill was Mike Pence.
And that was Justin Buechler of Case Western Reserve University. Also during the show, our reporter in the convention hall, Philip Alexio, caught up with a Hispanic Republican delegate from the southern state of Texas, Artemio Muniz. Muniz talked about how his fellow Hispanics back home are concerned about some of Trump's tough words against illegal immigrants, many of whom are Latinos. Alexio asked Muniz whether he thinks Trump can overcome those concerns.
I do. I think he is the ultimate salesman. He would be the kind of guy that has the talent to be able to do that. He can keep the base happy, show strength in law and order at the border, build a wall, but at the same time convince the Hispanic community that he has the best of intentions, and also talk about what kind of legalization program does he have. Now he has to change from mass deportation. He has in the last 2 weeks, but he's got to be able to show the Hispanic community that he's not going to go out there in the middle of the night and deport people while they're going to their churches or their schools or even at their workplaces. And I think that's the change he can do, is talk about a legalization program where people can apply here locally. Right, there's talk of having them to send them back, and the best can come back, is what he said. Well, you know, if you speak to a lot of people whose family they have family members or church members or neighbors that are illegal, they don't trust other governments to decide who comes back.
Well, for more of that conversation, you can find clips of the show on our hashtag VOA Facebook page from tomorrow. Jim.
All right, thank you very much, Michael Lippin, host of hashtag VOA. Always a great program each week to watch. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
The Philippines on Tuesday rejected a Chinese offer of bilateral talks over the South China Sea tensions. That because Beijing refuses to discuss a recent court ruling that rejected most of China's sovereignty claims. Since last week's ruling, China's vessels have made several maneuvers and military drills have resumed southeast of Hainan Island. And these drills come as the chief of U.S. naval operations, Admiral John Richardson, was ending 3 days of talks with his Chinese counterparts in Beijing. University of New South Wales Professor Emeritus, consultant, and analyst Carl Thayer in Australia tells VOA's Victor Beatty that China's latest drills are not in the contested area of the South China Sea, which is affected by the 500-page tribunal ruling.
China conducted naval operations in these same areas just before the tribunal ended, and these are a continuation of them. They're far removed from the disputed area, the Spratly Islands, and indeed the American aircraft carriers were operating on the east side of the Philippines outside that area itself. But we've had Chinese military aircraft fly over the area. So this is a bit of posturing. And I think what's happening now is that not only is Admiral Richardson there, but he's being accompanied by the National Security Advisor, Dr. Susan Rice. And there'll be private discussions about how the two manage the next few months, which are going to be a very sensitive time.
The fact that Admiral Richardson and the National Security Director are in Beijing means that the lines of communication remain open.
Absolutely. But at the same time, we have Vice President Biden here in Australia meeting today with the Prime Minister and the Foreign Minister. And the news accounts, quoting officials around them, they're going to talk about how to calibrate the brinkmanship. A marked and stepped-up increase of joint naval patrols appears as on the agenda for the South China Sea. And the press is saying the greatest number of Australian ships in the area since the Vietnam War. This is being discussed because the Arbitral Tribunal has created a whole new legal ballgame that nothing out there in the South China Sea is entitled to a 200 nautical mile exclusive economic zone, no land feature. And the tribunal identified a few rocks that are given 12 nautical miles. The rest are low tide elevations. And that creates a problem because Mischief Reef, which has a runway on it, is a low tide elevation. And the tribunal said it was not subject to appropriation, although China has taken and occupied it. Also, the Arbitral Tribunal ruled you couldn't take the Spratlys as a whole and put baselines around them or as a group. So it's created a lot of little ponds out there, little circles of 12 nautical miles. And then the water in between them would be high seas. And America would be free to do ordinary operations through those areas. But if it passed within the 12 nautical miles, would have to exercise innocent passage. And China can't stop either operation legally. It can challenge them, but it would be illegal. It's legal to go through a territorial sea on innocent passage. And the freedoms of the high sea are the traditional meaning of freedom of navigation for maritime powers.
Carl Thayer adds, while the overall tribunal ruling is a major setback for China, there is a basis for talks between Beijing and Manila. The court ruled that both countries have historical fishing rights around the Scarborough Shoal. You'll find more of this on our website, voanews.com, also on Twitter at @VOA_IE, and on our Facebook page, VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Sarah Williams on our team has spoken with Border Crossings host Larry London about one of singer Taylor Swift's latest controversies.
So, Larry, I understand that singer Taylor Swift is involved in a new controversy.
Yes, exactly, Sarah. Unfortunate for Taylor, but yes, she was in a 15-month relationship with a Scottish DJ music producer whose name is Calvin Harris. He wrote a song along with Taylor while they were together in a relationship called This Is What You Came For. And he spoke publicly that he would not record the song with Taylor when asked, but he did record it with Rihanna, has released it with Rihanna. It's become a hit and just recently became known that Taylor Swift wrote the song. And so people are asking, why didn't she get to record it and things like that. And the interesting fact is that she gets writing credit, but under an alias. She did not give her name as the writer. He didn't list her as the writer. But now that this has all come out, unfortunately, she is now identified as the writer of this song, which makes this more interesting because, you know, he dated her. They wrote it together at that time, and now it's become a big hit.
Yeah, well, so she still gets some money for it.
She's going to get money for it. She, apparently, from what I read, has the legal right to say that you cannot play this song in public. You cannot perform it, but she hasn't done that just yet. Obviously, she's not harboring any animosity towards Calvin Harris, her ex-boyfriend. And we don't know the facts as to why they ended their 15-month relationship. She's now taken up with actor Tom Hiddleston, who is in line to star in the next 007 film. He's right now in Australia filming Thor 3. And so we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but Calvin Harris is a very talented guy and said that this whole thing is hurtful. That was what he tweeted this week. It's hurtful. So what we're going to do is play the song that we're talking about, which is called This Is What You Came For.
Baby, this is what you came for. Lightning strikes every time she moves.
Okay, now Taylor has a history of writing about old boyfriends.
Yes, she does, exactly. She loves to write about old boyfriends, and now it's kind of a turn of events here in that Calvin Harris has put out a song. And there are other songs also circulating. There's a song that he supposedly wrote about her called Olay that was released just about a week after they broke up. And so, we don't know the facts. We don't know what happened. We'll never know what really went on. And, so she does continue to write about boyfriends. And she's due for some new music, too. Her album 1989, which was one of the best-selling albums a couple of years ago, and also landed her on Forbes' list of the highest-paid celebrity this year in 12 months at $170 million. But it's been a couple of years, and she has a pattern of waiting every 2 years to release a new album, and we're there. So hopefully she'll put something out soon.
Yeah, Tom Hiddleston better beware.
That's right, beware. The next song could be 007.
Thanks a lot, Larry London.
Thank you, Sarah.
Been listening to International Edition. You can stay up to date on the latest from the Republican National Convention in Cleveland on our International Edition programs at our website, voanews.com, and on Facebook, VOA Now. Also follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Mark Ferguson. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thanks so much for spending part of your day with us. Have a great day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For generations, the United States has been a leader in providing development assistance across the globe to alleviate suffering and build shared progress and prosperity. In 2010, as food prices spiked and pushed the numbers of the food insecure people to over 1 billion, the administration of President Barack Obama launched Feed the Future, the U.S. government's primary global hunger and food security initiative. The initiative's main objective is the advancement of global agricultural development as a proven mechanism for economic growth. Feed the Future is helping millions of rural farming families to boost their incomes. In 2015 alone, these farmers increased sales on their farms by more than $800 million. The U.S. government also reached nearly 18 million children in developing countries with vital interventions to improve their nutrition last year. In early July, the United States took yet another big step toward eliminating hunger and malnutrition. The United States Congress passed the Global Food Security Act, and President Obama signed it into law. Under the Global Food Security Act, the White House will develop the first-ever Global Food Security Strategy, a comprehensive approach for assisting developing countries to increase sustainable and equitable agricultural development, reduce hunger, improve nutrition, develop rural infrastructure, and stimulate rural economies. It also promotes transparency by instituting standards of effectiveness and requiring an annual report, tracking the expenditures of 11 federal departments and agencies that engage in agricultural development and food security efforts. The Global Food Security Act of 2016 will put Feed the Future, our global hunger and food security initiative, into law, said President Obama in a written statement. This game-changing development initiative, the first of my administration, has helped increase economic growth and stem the tide of global hunger, poverty, and malnutrition over the span of just a few years, he said. While we've already accomplished so much through this collaborative global partnership, I know that with the continued effort and support that this legislation provides, we can achieve what was just a few years ago the unimaginable. we can end global poverty and hunger within our lifetimes.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.